Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Sarah Gustavus. Getting online is something many people now take for granted, but in rural New Mexico, finding a reliable and fast internet connection can be difficult. If you live outside Albuquerque, Santa Fe, or Las Cruces, how do you get online? Do you have to drive up to the road to catch a signal on your phone? Do you have to do all your homework or online business when you're out in town, at school, or work? We want to hear from you. Tell us about the challenges you face accessing the internet. The number to call today is 277-5866. KUNM and our partners in the State of Change Project are reporting this month on potential solutions to help improve internet access in rural New Mexico. Leah Todd is with us in studio. She's the Mountain West Coordinator for the Solutions Journalism Network and a reporter for the State of Change Project. Thanks for joining us, Leah.
Thanks, Sarah.
We also have Marisa DeMarco, reporter at KUNM, and she's produced some stories for the project. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Leah, I'm going to start with you. Let's set the stage for what is solutions journalism.
Solutions journalism is rigorous reporting on the responses to social problems instead of just reporting on the problems themselves. So we as journalists are all trained to use our investigative reporting skills to ferret out and find the worst examples, the worst misbehaviors. And solutions journalism basically takes that one step farther and asks, who is the positive deviant? What can we learn from the places that are actually doing it better? What do those have to teach the rest of the communities who are dealing with this same problem? So at the very basic level, it is rigorous, evidence-based reporting on what people and places are trying to solve social problems.
And so are those reporters advocating for a particular solution when they go out looking for those deviants?
Not at all. So in an ideal world, reporters would actually, like we are in this State of Change project, have the chance to look at multiple fixes to the problem. So you're not espousing any one fix to the problem when you're just writing about what one community has done to respond to an issue that they're dealing with. So you look at multiple issues, you look at multiple responses to the issues, and you lay out all the ways that that response might not be working. So more than this is a home run, this is a silver bullet, there's really no perfect solution to any one problem. And so as a reporter, it's about laying out, here's what we know, and here's what we don't know about how well this is working.
We're going to get into that this hour, specifically on this issue of internet access. But if folks want to call in and talk about solutions as well, if you have a question about solutions journalism, or you want to talk about what you think this might mean for New Mexico if we use this approach on other stories, the number again is 277-5866. And so, Marisa and Leah, you guys have been looking at the Kit Carson Cooperative in Taos. Marisa, why did the co-op see, what need did they see in the community?
Yeah, so from the folks we talked to, there were big problems with internet service, especially the further out you get from Taos. So Kit Carson doesn't just provide service in Taos, but to many homes in that whole region, some of which are in mountainous areas that big telecom companies weren't interested in building infrastructure in. Because if you imagine, it can be quite expensive to do that in some of these like rougher terrains, especially when you have like weather concerns, and then you don't have a regular customer base or you don't have a very big customer base. So, you know, the bottom line for corporations, you know, they have to make a certain amount of profit, whereas the co-op, which is a member-owned co-op, is able to say, like, we're going to do this. We're going to, like, fly helicopters across the gorge with fiber optic cable and just try to make the money back that we spend trying to do that. So they're not necessarily trying to turn a profit. So they're able to provide this very fast connectivity for relatively inexpensive, less money than what a lot of us pay even in urban centers.
And then, you know, the conversation's really changing about internet access, if it's not something that's just for fun or for entertainment, but really crucial for people's businesses, education, you know.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when we think of internet service, we think, oh, maybe people just want to look at their Facebook or they want to watch Netflix. But, you know, you forget that, A, you know, social networks are a big part of the opportunities that we come across. B, that so much of our information is communicated now through video, which is complicated to stream and get into your home if you don't have a reliable connection. And never mind, you know, obviously, like, college applications, homework, online learning. We always hear also about, like, telehealth as being a solution to New Mexico's shortage of medical providers. How are you supposed to access your telehealth doctor if you don't have good connectivity where you live? So it's really, it is a very important concern and something that a lot of people around the country are looking at as a an economic justice issue, as a civil rights issue, having good access to reliable, fast service.
Leah, you are based in Taos. How would you describe the internet access right now?
It's not always easy, is the simplest way to put it. I often am kicked off the internet, and I work from home. I'm a remote worker myself, and I am regularly resetting the router in our living room, trying to reboot the internet. So it's spotty, and I live pretty close to the center of town.
Yeah. And, you know, but this issue, it's not just about internet. The State of Change Project has been looking at what helps rural, what would help rural communities thrive. How is internet part of that piece of the puzzle on making sure that communities can thrive, people can stay there, they can work, they can be near their family?
Well, I think two ways that that comes into play is, as Marisa said, the telehealth angle is extremely crucial for emergency rooms in the state of New Mexico, which are constantly consulting with the urban centers and medical experts who are based in Albuquerque to give pretty life-saving advice on a really fast, short timeline. So, for the viability of the health systems and to continue to care for these aging, in many cases, rural communities, that's important. And secondly, there is this whole theme of, you know, what are the businesses going to be? What are the systems going to be in a generation from now in the rural communities in New Mexico or across the West? And we don't really know the answer to that question. We know that some of the past economic themes have, you know, died out, aren't as viable today. Farming, ranching, big oil and gas, mining, all of those industries have changed dramatically over the past generation. And so what are the jobs that are going to power the future? There's this big question of all of those businesses, no matter what they are, will need an internet connection to connect them with urban markets that are far away in real life, but can be very close online. Not to mention SolarWorks, which Sarah is a story that I think we'll talk about later. So this idea of powering a critical number of remote workers in rural areas who live in beautiful Taos, you know, but are able to commute in every day via internet connection.
And for folks listening today, what do you think about this? Are you also a remote worker? Would you like to do remote work in a rural place in New Mexico? And internet access is a challenge for you right now. The number to call to join our conversation is 277-5866. Again, that's 277-5866. If you do have good internet access, you can also email letstalk@kunm.org. Marisa, I understand it was a big challenge for the Kit Carson Co-op to make this move into the internet space. What were some of those issues that they faced?
Well, I think the biggest one was funding. So they got a $40 million grant from the federal government, and then they borrowed an additional $19 million, I think, because it took so much work to lay line in this rough terrain. So, you know, I met a worker who what he does is he has these spikes on his boots and he like climbs utility poles in regions that like trucks can't get to. They also, like I said before, used helicopters to fly between mountain peaks. And they're laying line right up to people's homes, which sometimes are a great distance apart from one another. And they also seem to kind of tackle the hardest regions first. So they were going to like Amalia and Costilla and all these smaller towns that are kind of further out and tried to get the net connected there. So I think that was one big barrier is just the infrastructure and the cost.
Leah, what about some of the regulatory barriers?
Sure. So co-ops were originally, or at least Kit Carson Electric Co-op was originally established as an electric co-op, like many other cooperatives were. And so I spoke to Robert Castillo, who's the CEO of Continental Divide Electric Co-op over in Grants, New Mexico, for this story that Marisa and I co-reported about this trend of electric co-ops adding internet. And Robert said that his board actually had to vote to change their bylaws in order to branch out away from just electric service to start providing the internet. So there are regulatory barriers at the local level in ways that these co-ops have to actually restructure themselves to be able to reach out into the internet. And then there's also kind of a cultural barrier that Luis Reyes, the CEO of Kit Carson, described to us, which is these rural electric co-ops are very used to being a monopoly. They are, in most cases, the only electric provider in their community. Not so with the internet. There are, in most cases, multiple different kinds of internet connections that you can have underground, overhead, via cell phone towers. I mean, the infrastructure is really diverse, and there are lots of players in the market. And so they had, Luis had to describe this cultural shift that he had to make for his employees to a much more competitive market. And I think that's a barrier, too, for co-ops that are trying to make make this switch.
Marisa, did you talk with some folks who they would maybe this would be a game changer for them to have access to the internet, better access?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, one person I spoke with, for instance, was in this neighborhood in the Pot Creek area where everybody, she said, was trying to do any business they had to do online, like in the middle of the night, because they were trying to access the net at times when their neighbors might not also be trying to get online. And so, you know, you just think about how that changes your daily life. If you're a young person trying to do homework, if you're trying to catch up with family that maybe also lives remotely or lives elsewhere, if you're trying to look up health information, like all of that stuff that we kind of take for granted being able to do just very quickly, you're kind of like waiting for these windows in the night when maybe it will be functional. So I think that's, you know, I think that even in just like a residential kind of home way, that it is, it does really change your life. But I know that also, for instance, people lost a lot of jobs when the mine closed and were able to pick up some work for Kit Carson creating this infrastructure. So it's been transformative in that way, too, in that people are able to find some work or create businesses based on bringing this project out that way.
Oh, that's interesting. Not just the jobs that might be online, but the jobs in getting it there and then maintaining it after it's put in. I would imagine there's some jobs there as well.
Yeah, they had. I think they said they hired about 300 folks to get the project off the ground after they got the grant funding.
And those were short-term jobs. And in the long term, there were, I think, just a couple dozen that were added to Kit Carson as a result of the internet service. But still, you know, definitely a new set of jobs that are steady work and high wage.
Yeah. We're going to talk about some other potential solutions this hour, but we do want to hear from folks your thoughts on access to the internet, especially in rural New Mexico, not limited to rural New Mexico, but that's where we're starting our conversation today. The number again, 277-5866 to join our conversation. Let's go now to Greg in Acoma. Greg from Acoma Pueblo, what would you like to add to our conversation?
Yes, thank you. Good morning. And I want to thank you for addressing this topic. Just want to encourage in furthering this discussion that whoever does research or makes any attempts to expand the access to the internet, the tribal communities like mine, we're quite isolated.
Oh, Greg, we have kind of a tough connection with you right now, but I'm hearing you saying that there's not an effort to extend it to tribal communities in New Mexico. And we are specifically looking at that in this project. Antonio Gonzalez from National Native News is going to be on in just a few minutes to talk about a Pueblo consortium that's doing that. Greg, are you still there? No, we lost him. We will be talking about access for tribal communities in just a few minutes. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, the number to call to join us today, 277-5866. If you do have access to the internet and you want to leave a comment with us by email letstalk@kunm.org. All right, Marisa, you also looked to other communities across the country, including larger cities that I think a lot of people assume have good internet access. What did you hear from other communities?
Yeah, so while this project is focusing on access as a rural concern, there are, you know, neighborhoods in New York and in Detroit where access is either not there or limited or spotty. And there's have been some recent studies done that have found that availability relates a lot to the income level of the neighborhood, but there's another, even outside of income, that it also relates to race. And so, not just because often in our culture, people of color are more likely to have lower incomes, but there's an entirely separate factor there. And so what they were talking about is that this becomes, in some communities, really a civil rights issue. Like in Detroit, there are 40% of homes, people don't have home access to the internet. And so what people are starting to do is to create their own neighborhood networks. And there are organizations that help train folks so that they can build their own network in their community. And then they organize their own, you know, financial structure. Sometimes it's given away for free. And the only cost is trying to get the money together to kind of build that network at the get-go. There really are looking at taking that control and not just waiting for corporations to come in and decide that they're going to provide good broadband and good service.
Mm. All right. This is the KUNM call-in show. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. We used to be the KUNM call-in show. My mind went back a little bit in time there. We're talking about internet access today. Tell us what you think about our conversation. What solutions do you think would address access to the internet in rural New Mexico? The number is 277-5866. You can also call 877-899-5866. We're also live tweeting the show. Send us your comments using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM.
Support comes from Railyard Urgent Care in Santa Fe, locally owned and operated by physicians. Urgent care services on a walk-in basis 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Railyard Urgent Care, 831 South St. Francis Drive.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
You know that friend who's also kind of a rival? These days we call that person a frenemy. Composer George Frideric Handel had lots of frenemies who were composers, enough for the ensemble Tempesta di Mare to program a whole concert. Music by Maurice Green, Frenemy of Handel, on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
I'm Sarah Gustavus. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. We're talking about internet access in rural New Mexico today. Are you a student or do you have students at home? Have you found that challenges getting online is hurting your ability to get schoolwork done? What creative things have you done to get online? Do you sit outside a McDonald's or a Starbucks? Have you gone to a parking lot outside the library at night? We want to hear what you've done to get online to make sure those important assignments are finished. The number to call, 277-5866. Marisa, having good, fast internet access, you know, it's not just a challenge in communities. There's also been the rollback of net neutrality rules under the Trump administration. Can you remind folks what that means and why it's important right now?
You know, it's all about there were regulations in place that made it so that your internet service provider couldn't throttle your access, couldn't throttle your speeds, block your access, for instance, to a competitor's website. So it's really about having a free and open internet available to you. And that's the way that we have, most of us have really enjoyed it so far. We have had net neutrality in this country for the most part. So one of the things that's come up is that when people are building these smaller networks, when co-ops are creating their own access and networks, that they can choose to make sure that net neutrality is in place so that it's not just in the hands of telecom monopolies to make that decision. But, for instance, Kit Carson made a commitment to keeping their network neutral. And a lot of these neighborhood networks that we're talking about before the break are also making that commitment and creating networks as a solution to the rollbacks of net neutrality. So I talked to Motherboard's editor-in-chief, who was talking about how on the day that the FCC voted to roll back net neutrality regulations, that Motherboard announced that it would be building its own network as a response to that decision. So it's, you know, it's a solution to access problems in an infrastructure way, and then maybe also in this other corporate interference way.
Interesting. We have some folks calling in now wanting to, I think, make some comments about internet access. Brock in Las Vegas, welcome to the show. What do you want to add?
Yeah, I'm actually basing my thesis project. I'm a student at New Mexico Highlands University, basing my thesis project on accessibility to resources, mainly particular to young people. And this is totally relevant. I did some interviews with some students and asked them aspects of their lives, and a lot of them, of course, address, you know, lack of access to internet and cell service, and that affects them, of course, in school studies, but also with fields of job opportunities that they want to pursue. Like one student in particular who lives in Vianuela, which is like 30 or 40 minutes outside of Las Vegas, who has his nearest neighbors 2 miles away, but his whole life pertains around technology. He's a computer programmer. But how do you pursue this if you have inconsistent connections to internet? And one, I don't want to say solution, but one workaround that a group in Las Vegas is working towards is this group called DesertGate, and they're actually working around fiber optics. They're doing a new thing called air fiber, so using towers to project network connections. And it's really, how they're doing it is really profound for people who maybe cannot afford these kind of resources. They'll work out deals like, hey, you have property over here. Let's. Would you mind if we put up a tower to transmit network? And if you can't afford it, we'll give you internet service for letting us use your property. So I just wanted to hear maybe more on how you all think that this kind of challenge is affecting younger people, and also how it may be affecting local economy in small communities. Like if we have college students graduating in fields of technology, can't access internet or cell service, then having to move away to larger cities, right? And and also decreasing the population and local economy in small communities.
Brock, that is the heart of this project. Those are exactly the kinds of things that we are looking at. We're going to get into a few more specific projects in just a couple of minutes. Thank you for calling in today and sharing that information about another potential solution that we could follow up on. Let's go now to Mike in Albuquerque. Mike, what do you want to share with us today?
Yeah, I used to live in Alberta, Canada, in Edmonton, the city, and they have a similar situation to us. They, because of historic reasons, they have something, I don't know, it's not called a permanent fund, but it's something, it's another, but it's a huge blob of money that's supposed to be used for the development of the state. And one of the things they decided to do was to use some of that money to build out the internet, literally to put fiber on the backs of houses all over the province. And basically, it's a business. You know, you pay for your fiber access and things like that. So and I'm just wondering, I know the politics of our permanent fund are really iffy, but it seems like we have the resources to go out and build out the internet throughout. I mean, it should be in Abiquiu, it should be everywhere. And why is that a possibility that somebody's discussing? Because this could be a business model too, because once you have fiber on the back of the house, then you have telephone, then you have you know, TV, so you have a whole host of things. And these places that the major corporations, frankly, I live in Albuquerque, I live in Knob Hill, I have pretty decent internet, but I would gladly pay to have a pair of fibers on the back of my house.
Interesting. Mike, the tapping the land grant permanent fund, pretty complicated, but interesting idea of what's the way that we can look at this in a new angle. Thanks for calling in today. Let's go now to Rose in Los Lunas. Rose, what do you think about funding for doing this kind of work?
So we're small business, and we're a small communications company out of New Mexico, and we have laid a lot of what they call fiber to the home, the dark fiber, mainline, that kind of thing, throughout eastern New Mexico. We did it for several years under the stimulus monies that came out, there was a whole push for, you know, the stimulus monies bringing fiber into, like, the Kit Carson project up northern New Mexico. And as I said, we worked throughout all eastern New Mexico. I could name numerous towns and so forth. And, for example, in Santa Rosa, they did do what the gentleman previous to me, it funded that to bring the infrastructure in. And then as people could, they would pay for the connection. And so we participated in that. I think one of the, we've actually, ironically enough, have had a dream to take fiber to the pueblos. We're federal contractors also. And I know I've heard, you know, Grapevine and so forth, that there's grants or there's money to do something like this. but we never seem to be able to pin it down as small contractors. That's one of my points.
Yeah.
And then the other is, to grants. And I just think that if that were possible, there'd be more linkages of networks of how small businesses like ours could execute something like that, like at the pueblos. we would love it. And so that's partly why I'm calling it.
Rose, what's your company?
L&R Comm, COMM, short for Communication and Construction Incorporated. And we, you know, we've been in business since the end of 2011, but our field managers and main, you know, company, we've all been in business over 30 years. But when we first opened, that was part of our business plan, is let's really commit to the communications piece, partly because of my brother. His name was Flooded. And he really was an expert in communications. So we really, we contracted with Team Fischel, who came in, who's no longer in the state, but they were the prime contractor for the stimulus monies that came out from the federal government under, I think it was Obama at the time. And so, you know, so we really experienced fiber, bringing fiber to rural community and the value of it. But there's, you know, obviously, because, you know, there's obviously not enough.
Yeah. Rose, we've got a bunch of calls coming in right now, so we're going to need to move on real quick. But thank you for calling and raising that question about kind of the small guys trying to apply for grants, trying to get into the game, and the challenges that you might face. I think that's something to follow up on. Leah Todd from the Solutions Journalism Network, your thoughts on that call?
Yeah, Rose, you make a really good point. I think you're pointing out two different kinds of barriers when it comes to small organizations who are trying to launch internet networks. And one is accessing federal, state, other kinds of funding to pay for infrastructure. And the second is just noticing that money is limited. So the conversation at the national level right now is really not at a consensus on whether or not the internet is a public utility in the same way that electricity was back in the New Deal era. So the kinds of subsidies and grants and loans that are available are limited. So you're right in saying that navigating all of those federal grant requirement waters is really, really tough. Deadlines, what money can and can't be used for. It's a challenge we heard a lot in reporting these stories.
Mm. Let's go now to Gilbert in Santa Fe. Gilbert, what do you want to bring into the conversation today?
The question is how is right-of-way access across the federal lands, the native lands, affecting companies' ability to actually provide internet service? I heard that some of the tribal don't want to allow the companies to have right-of-way.
Leah, did you come across that in your report?
I didn't run into that specifically. I actually ran into the opposite. And I think we'll hear from Antonia later in the show about how four tribal nations here in New Mexico were actually the right sources, the right people who had the access, who knew the people and the different jurisdictions that were that have you know, oversight over the different federal and tribal and state and private lands that are in between Santa Fe and Albuquerque. And those tribes actually maneuvered all of the systems to make it work, to make right-of-way possible. But I didn't run into the specific concern he's talking about.
Marisa?
In the first round of our reporting, which you and I did when we went to the Navajo Nation and talked to President Piguet, he was talking about how they just got control of their telecom right-of-ways from the federal government. So there used to be this incredibly cumbersome process whenever any company wanted to do anything, whether it was from within the reservation or outside of it, that you would have to go through like 17 steps at the federal with the federal government to access those. And so that might all be in the process of changing now.
That would be an interesting change. Jan, calling in from outside Mountain Air, what do you want to tell us today about accessibility and affordability?
Well, you know, I can get access to high-speed internet, but I can't afford it. You know, I bought my internet access from a company who markets through the Rural Electric Co-op. Bought the second slowest speed, and over the past 10 years, that monthly rate has tripled, more than. So, you know, I cannot afford a higher speed, and as the technology improves, higher speed is more and more a necessity. But in a state, we've got the fifth largest land mass, and
that connection, I think, is not quite going to work. But I see where you're going, Jan, with that. You know, there is this issue of even if you can get internet access, sometimes it's very unaffordable. And also you're needing higher and higher speeds all the time, which just increases the cost unless there's another solution. Let's bring in now Antonia Gonzalez. She's the anchor and producer of National Native News. Antonia and Leah and I have been working on radio and TV and print stories about access to the internet in tribal communities. Welcome, Antonia.
Good morning.
So these four pueblos got together in northern New Mexico to install broadband lines to connect their libraries. What did access look like before this project?
So access to the internet here in New Mexico and tribes across the country, there's limited access. We see a lot of people use libraries as one of the main sources as a way to connect to the web, other than personal data plans, which is spotty in on-reservation communities across the country, including here in New Mexico. And so this story that we are doing on broadband in tribal communities here in New Mexico really highlights a project where four tribes, four pueblos banded together and got this federal E-rate subsidy so that they could bring high-speed internet to their tribal libraries, which will help people with education and other opportunities. A lot of times tribal members use the internet for higher education, to get documents, for a number of things that, you know, that aren't available to people like we enjoy here in the city.
And also, Kevin Lewis, the education director at the Pueblo of Cochiti, told us the tribe is currently paying $1,500 a month for internet access. How did they adapt to that in the library?
So the library, the after-school program, the kids, about 20 to 30 kids who use the Cochiti Pueblo Library, often are feeling the impacts of that high cost of the internet and, you know, with limited data that they have to pick and choose. Staff will pick and choose who gets to use the internet. Kevin gave a great story about how there was an educator there on the Pueblo who was getting a higher education. And so they really had to pick and choose and limit the after-school program kids. Another barrier, too, that impacts the tribal libraries is the time. Most of these libraries are only open from 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. And those of us who have children know that, you know, homework isn't just 8 to 5. We have a lot, you know, kids need to use the internet for different school projects. And then if you're a college student, having that access to be able to go to school is a huge barrier for a lot of tribal communities.
And Leah, from what Kevin was sharing as well, what would a change, a reduction in that cost mean for the tribe?
It would mean that they could put more money into the services that they provide. So more books in the library, more software systems that they could use, more infrastructure and computers to hook more people up into the urban centers where these universities are located.
Yeah. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. We're talking about internet access in rural New Mexico this hour. What would improved internet access mean for you? What would a cheaper internet, faster internet, how would that change how you do your schoolwork, how you run your business, the opportunities that you have? We want to hear from you. The number is 277-5866. Again, that's 277-5866. We also use the hashtag Let's Talk NM on Twitter. We're going to go to a quick break and we'll be right back.
This Saturday, starting at 9 a.m. on the Children's Hour, we'll be joined by Albuquerque's new mayor, Tim Keller. We'll find out what the mayor does at his job, hear about his plans for the future of Albuquerque, and learn how he overcame dyslexia. A morning with Mayor Tim Keller on the Children's Hour, this Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m.
Through the years, James Luna's work challenged concepts of indigenous identity, culture, and stereotypes. In one of his most notable works, he put himself in a glass museum display case. The Luceño performance and installation artists walked on recently. We'll talk with his friends and family about his life and work on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. There is still time to get in on our conversation today. The number to call, 877-899-5866. If you have comments about internet access, both in rural and urban communities in New Mexico, but particularly if you're struggling to access the internet right now, what would help you? What would improve it? Would it be lowering the cost, making sure that the internet is faster? We want to hear your comments and questions today, your ideas for what we could do moving forward. Again, 877-899-5866. Antonia Gonzalez from National Native News. We had a caller just a few minutes ago who asked about right-of-ways. What's the significance of these tribes working together in the Middle Rio Grande Pueblo Tribal Consortium to address those issues of installing the broadband across tribal lands?
So tribes that were involved in this project, there was a lot of communication and collaboration. And you hear from tribal leaders on such projects, any projects impacting their communities, that sovereignty is they take into consideration, and they look at how these different projects are going to impact their community members. And for the tribal leaders, Cochiti we talked to, you know, they saw this as a benefit for the young people, and they worked together to make sure that some of these issues, you know, that they had agreement on some of these issues, including the right-of-way. And so that's how they were able to do this project. And also just the importance of government-to-government relationships and collaborating on all different levels with the local, state, and different federal agencies that are involved in doing such a project like this one.
And Leah, we went out to see some of the digging work. What did you notice as we stopped along the side of the road several times?
Well, I just remember being shocked that this is what the internet looks like. You know, it's just cables and lines underground, in some cases overhead, which sounds really naive and sort of simplistic. But I, as a reporter, had not really grasped what the internet was and kind of just the massive infrastructure in many places, especially in a terrain like northern New Mexico, in what it takes to get there. And so as we were standing with Antonia and Kevin Lewis, the education director at the Pueblo of Cochiti, I was just picking his brain about how the internet worked and the different kinds of light pulses that make up the internet on a fiber network versus other kinds of networks. And I was really shocked at just how complex this whole system is.
Yeah. Antonia, why is it important for the Pueblos to bring the internet into their community so people don't have to leave for jobs or school? That's something we also heard from Kevin.
So tribes across the country take pride in you know, their tribal community, different language, culture, history. And as we heard from Cochiti Pueblo, this is where they've been, and this is where they want their kids to be and be tied to the culture and the language and the history of the Pueblo. But they also, at the same time, want to be able to have their kids have the same access as everybody else. And so the issue for them is, how do we bring, an increased technology and have our students and our children have access to services and education just like everybody else in the state without them having to leave and move away from the community?
And remind us which pueblos are part of this consortium?
So Cochiti, Santo Domingo, Santa Ana, and San Felipe.
All right. If folks are listening from those communities today, we'd love to hear from you about what increased internet access would mean for you, what this broadband is going to help you be able to do for work, for school, for connecting with people outside of the Pueblo. The number 277-5866. Again, that's 277-5866. We have a comment from Carlos. He says, out on Parajito Mesa, the community has been struggling with the life and death issue of lack of location information for emergency responders. With all the technological advances we're facing, he wants to see that one addressed so that people can get fire and ambulance services on time and when they need them. Have you also heard this as an issue, Leah, in your reporting on internet and access across the state?
Yeah, Luis Reyes, the CEO of Kit Carson Co-op, talked about that a lot. And they started with essential infrastructure, hospitals, schools, the sheriff's office, you know, emergency personnel who need GPS, who need all kinds of technology to be able to get to life-threatening situations quickly. So it was a central part of Kit Carson's vision and their application for funding to start with these what are called anchor institutions in a community. And so Kit Carson put a big emphasis on that, as I imagine other co-ops have as well.
Antonia, what have you heard about emergency services and how that connects to this issue?
Yeah, a lot of people also rely on healthcare, using high-speed internet as well. And we heard that tribal leaders want to work with leaders, not only in the state, but also in Congress, to make sure that tribes are included in national infrastructure plans and that such money out there can go beyond education and help with increasing healthcare and also individual tribal member homes. And also when you look at a lot of businesses, there are a lot of people on reservations who have businesses, and so they want to provide other opportunities as well. And as we know, in rural communities, just like reservations across the country, the service is spotty, and so that impacts healthcare as well, especially when it comes to such emergency-type situations.
Are you an entrepreneur? Has internet access held you back in building your business? We want to hear about that today. The number 277-5866. We also want to hear from business owners. Has the cost of internet access been a burden for you? Again, you can still join our conversation this hour by calling 277-5866. Antonia, have you heard of other tribes starting this kind of collaborative work to bring internet access to multiple tribes at the same time?
I have not. This is one of the first stories that we've done, and looking at how the tribes, you know, they got together and they decided to do this project because having, you know, some of these communities are they wanted to have the bigger impact of getting this grant money together. So that's why they joined together, because they didn't have the numbers really that were needed to obtain such a grant. So it was helpful and beneficial for them to band together and to use this grant together as a collaboration. And some of the people involved in this collaboration are already getting, getting calls from people across the country asking them how they did it. And a lot of the people we talked to in this consortium, in this tribal consortium, are, you know, they want to help tribes here in New Mexico and also offer assistance and talk about some of the challenges and also some of the successes and how they were able to get this grant to bring this high-speed internet to their tribal libraries.
So the State of Change project that we're all working on together is, you know, a solutions approach. What do you think is different about that reporting, Antonia, and kind of sharing those, you know, both the challenges and those lessons learned in your reporting? Is that different for you?
I think so. I think it's looking at, you know, we see a lot of reports about things that are not working, about the challenges, about statistics, and looking at, you know, all the problems. But when we also look at what are tribes, what are community members doing to address these problems, and it also connects to other tribes across the country. So here's a group of four tribes here in New Mexico who were able to do this. Here's, you know, we're reporting on some of the challenges that they had, and then also how they were successful in obtaining this grant and being able to work as four sovereign tribes to bring this high-speed internet to the four tribal libraries as one group. And so I think it is a lot different when you're looking at the solutions and the challenges, but also, you know, just not talking about the troubling statistics or looking at the problems.
Leah Todd from the Solutions Journalism Network, you want to add something there?
Yeah, I would agree with everything Antonia just said. I mean, I think you're exactly right that we also look at the problems, we look at the barriers, you know, under a microscope, but we also look closely at who's doing something about those problems, and we have this belief that there is something to be learned, right, from those communities that are having some success. And I think it's important to mention here that none of these approaches to fixing rural internet connectivity issues is perfect, and no one approach to this issue is going to solve the whole complex problem, right? So all of our stories, I think, zoom out and point to that bigger picture, but in place the efforts that a particular tribe or a particular community is making in the bigger context. So with the Kit Carson example, for instance, you know, technological problems still haunt Kit Carson Co-op. You know, that is not a perfect system. They're still trying to figure out how do we get through this wait list of 12,000 customers in the three-county area that they serve, and how do we do it equitably? And there are all kinds of questions around that, as well as how does the co-op equitably provide internet service in this region without competing unfairly against other local internet providers who are also Kit Carson Electric members, you know? So they're complicated. It's not perfect. Every solution is imperfect in some way, you know, or every attempted solution is imperfect. And I think these stories and good solutions journalism goes deep into those barriers and limitations also, and that makes the story stronger.
Let's touch a little bit on another story in this series, looking at remote workers, an effort to encourage remote work in rural communities in New Mexico. What did you learn visiting SolarWorks and Grants?
So Sarah and I took a trip out to Grants, New Mexico, in the western part of the state, and we spent a day at the SolarWorks Center, which is kind of the farthest along of multiple communities in New Mexico that have taken up this attempt to create a sort of, it's like a beefed up co-working space and a sort of different kind of economic development that builds new jobs paid for by out-of-state employers. So these are new jobs coming into the state in a rural community that has experienced some destabilizing shift. Like in Grants and that corner of the state, it's been the closure of uranium mines over the last couple of decades that have has really changed the character of that community. So the SolarWorks program is slowly starting up in Grants. It's in sort of its second phase now. They have had a ton of rocky fits and starts, everything from funding battles at the legislature to try and get the funding they need to start this up, to the right leadership in place and battles with local economic development boards. I mean, it's been a really slow journey for this organization. But I think what I learned is that I personally haven't run into anything like this as a reporter and as a remote worker who lives in a rural place myself. I haven't seen anything quite like this before. It breaks the traditional economic development mold in that this program only gets funded if it creates jobs. And so it creates this sort of urgency among the staff at these centers that that you don't really find in a lot of other economic development programs that I've covered. And it also seems just really hard to do. Like there's a big challenge ahead for these programs to be able to create a critical mass of remote workers with the right internet connection who can viably work for employers out of state.
Yeah. They start off with this training program where they train people in kind of how to do remote work, how to deal with customers over the phone or over the internet, how to address different challenges they might face working from home. But then what if they want to work from home, but they can't work from home because they don't have the high-speed internet access at their house.
Yeah, so one way that the Solo Work Center, at least in grants, has fixed that issue is that they will offer co-working space to anyone who needs it. And they do have a high-speed internet connection at the center. You can rent a computer, a phone, and the internet connection for about $50 a month, which is cheaper than any co-working space I've heard of on a monthly basis, and also cheaper than I pay monthly for internet myself. And so you can access the internet in a quiet space to work at the center. And if you can't afford the $50 a month, they have ways that you can sort of volunteer or do a work trade by mentoring other trainees who are going through the SoloWorks training program.
What are some of the concerns you heard from lawmakers, other elected officials about this new model?
So it is a new model. I think that's important to emphasize. This has not been done in exactly the same form before. And so there are a lot of questions of how to fund this. Do you fund it through the Economic Development Council? Do you fund it through Workforce Solutions? You know, how much money is the state responsible for providing when this is supposed to be a job creation program that creates jobs at a cheaper rate than traditional economic development? So the long-term vision is that it does create jobs more cheaply and more cost-effectively, but they're not there yet. And they still need a lot of state funding and funding from the local communities to start up an office like what we saw in grants.
It's a very different conversation. You know, I think we've heard in the past these kind of splashy announcements about hundreds of jobs at a call center in Albuquerque. And this is not that level of hundreds of jobs at a time where they can make a big announcement.
Right.
Yeah.
It's building one job at a time. And up until now, those jobs have been primarily customer service and transcription jobs, which are not high wage. And so in order to make this program viable, they have to do two things. They have to first prove that they can aggregate and sustain these jobs over time. They have to prove that they can create a lot of jobs in this one-on-one way, and that people will stay in these jobs in remote areas for longer than just a couple months. And then secondly, they have to reach more high-wage services. You know, if this is going to be a sustainable program that really makes a difference for rural communities on a scale that, you know, we can notice a generation from now, it $7 an hour or $10 an hour making phone calls for a customer service agency is not the high-wage kind of work that the state really wants to see.
Yeah. We also, Antonia mentioned a few minutes ago, like the, you know, leaders in the Pueblo of Cochiti wanting to make sure that their, you know, younger tribal members could stay there, could stay in their community. We heard kind of the same thing from people as grants. That's where their family is. That's where they feel a deep connection to that particular community in New Mexico, and they want to stay there.
And that's true for young people and people who are older as well. So we talked to a 23-year-old named Will Yarborough, who is actually the son of the local economic development director, and he found a job through SoloWorks and is doing that instead of, you know, delivering pizzas as a college student. And he loves it. He's happy and he stayed in that job for about 6 months. We also talked with a woman who was in her 70s, who was born and raised in Grants, who wants to stay in Grants but needs a little extra money on the side and doesn't want to drive 80 miles to Albuquerque for an office job. And so working remotely from home would give her the flexibility to stay close to her grandkids who are in town. And so, you know, really, it's this huge age spectrum that has been tapping into this program so far in Grants.
Antonia, have you found the same thing in this need for internet access, that it's across the generations, it's a really broad need right now?
Yeah, like Leah said, you see the same type of sentiment in tribal communities where also there's a lack of, you know, opportunities for jobs is the same as what Leah was describing. And tribal leaders are hoping that increasing internet access, bringing high-speed internet to their communities can help people with job searches, which is really needed on reservation communities here in New Mexico and across the country as well.
What are some key takeaways from your reporting that you hope maybe will spark some new conversations about this issue?
I think definitely looking at some of the possibilities and collaborating and learning from each other and seeing, you know, here's something that worked for these four tribes in New Mexico. Maybe it's something that other tribes in New Mexico can take a look at and other tribes across the United States.
Antonia Gonzalez from National Native News. Thanks, Leah. Brief final comment. Key takeaways for you?
Yeah, I think that there are multiple avenues of funding for all of this internet work, and that the most interesting stories for me have been communities that have just not stopped until they found the funding that they need to get the infrastructure in place.
Excellent. We're going to put a link to the State of Change Project on our website, KUNM.org. We'll also put some resources about solutions journalism. The conversation doesn't have to end here. Use the hashtag #LetsTalkNM on Twitter, or go to KUNM.org where you can leave your comments and share the show with people you know. If you missed part of the show, stream it online or subscribe to our podcast. I'm Sarah Gustavus. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Sarah Trujillo screened your calls today with help from Mallory Begay. Victor Onimolate live tweeted the show, and Elaine Baumgartel is the executive producer. This is Let's Talk New Mexico.